The book has two parts. The first part is called Thinking. The second part is called Willing. And in that second part, she discusses at great length and with tremendous sophistication how the notion of freedom came to be articulated. When she locates its historical origins in the Stoics and in St. Paul and in St. Augustine, she is very mindful of the fact that they were dealing particularly with the inner life, and hence they focused on freedom. The Stoics, for instance, focused in on certain slaves. Epictetus, who wrote some of the greatest Stoic treatises, is himself a slave and is credited with the notion that even though he is bound in chains, nonetheless, he can think what he likes. And in that sense, he is free because he is free to think. St. Paul comes up with a strong notion of the idea because he's mindful of how many things he wants to do and yet what he should do. And he has this very strong sense of the difference between the compulsions of the law and the way in which he is freed to make other choices, whether or not these choices ever get acted upon in the public sphere. Augustine develops this in even greater detail, mindful particularly of the ways in which his own inclinations were headed in a certain direction, and how much he found it possible to move his limbs, to walk and to talk, and yet how he could not manage to make a decisive conviction about his life until the grace of God finally overwhelmed him and set him free from some of the compulsions. But when Augustine starts to reflect on all this, he comes up with one of the lines that I think is one of the greatest insights in the history of philosophy. Augustine says at one point, "Freedom from crime is only the beginning of freedom." When we're free from having committed a crime, from having done a serious sin, all right, then we don't need to worry about it. The law will not be on our trail. Somebody is not going to discover and expose us. We won't have to pay consequences. And yet that's only the beginning of freedom. Freedom, for Augustine and for many thinkers who are later in the Aristotelian tradition, freedom is going to be a matter of self-mastery, a matter of self-determination, a matter of knowing one's options and choosing among one's options with a kind of mastery that comes from a real life of virtue, from a life of having disposed one's passions and one's feelings in such a way that the person himself, and not external circumstances, will control the outcome of the options that we meet in life. As Augustine continues to develop that, one comes to a much more sophisticated theory of freedom that I think culminates in Thomas Aquinas, whose notion of freedom is this, that there are various goods that attract us, just as there are various evils that repel us, but that none of the goods that we might ever come into direct contact with in this life, none of the goods that we would see or smell or touch or feel, none of them are infinite. And hence, our own will is always able to master, at least in principle, any good that attracts us or any evil to which we find ourselves repelled. The only good which we could not withstand, says Thomas, would be the very sight of God. And in his judgment, this is part of the reason why we do not see God face to face in this life, so as to keep us free and allow us to make the decisions to lead our life in the path that we will choose in accordance with God's will as we best know it, or in some way or other, being willing to oppose God's will even if we have come to know it. Aquinas' position is an effort to give the psychology of freedom and to say the reason why we're free is that our will is, at least in principle, stronger than any of the goods with which we might come into contact. But when Aquinas says that, he is following up on the basic insight that Aristotle has proposed to us here in the third book of the Nicomachean Ethics. Aristotle doesn't go quite that far with it, but he sets up the insight that makes the rest of that stream of insights I was just now describing possible. He does so by focusing in on the factor of choice, a suggestion, whatever the internal procedures, whatever the mechanics that are taking place within our minds by which we become aware of a good and that we deliberate about the possible means to that good and the likely cost of attaining that particular good, we finally will bring ourselves to a decisive act of choice. And the decisive act of choice is when we commit ourselves and act for a certain good and therefore bear responsibility.